You're listening to Inside iOS Dev, Episode 4, The Problems with Third-Party Services. Hi, everyone. You're listening to Inside iOS Dev, a show about real-world iOS development, here with your host, Andrew Roan.
And Alex Bush.
And today, we're going to talk about the pitfalls of using third-party services in your application and how you can work around those pitfalls. So what are third-party services and what are the ones we use in our app?
Right. So an example of third-party services would be analytics service that tracks users' behavior and everything that users do in the app, or a service that shows pop-ups and similar alerts or notifications in the app. Or, I guess, something that handles links, for example, deep linking, right? The things that typically you would think is not that complicated to implement, but actually, especially on the iOS platform, turns out to be, well, sometimes incredibly hard or time-consuming to build.
Right.
And that's where you would, well, again, right, the trade-off is whether you build it yourself if you have resources and a bigger team, I guess, or you would use help of those third-party services to provide you the functionality for, well, literally a price, right? You pay for those services.
Right. So I just want to give an example. So Leanplum is a third-party service. It's basically an A/B testing service, and just using what Alex just talked about, you can take the time to write code to A/B test your users, bucket them, and present different information depending on which bucket those users are in. But that is kind of an application and service in itself, and it can be, as you said, quite complicated. So that is an example of a third. That would be a service, and then the third-party service would be Leanplum, who provide that service kind of prepackaged for you.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So in our case, we have a pretty complex application, and we have a need to use a bunch of those at the end of the day, such as Andrew said, for A/B testing, Leanplum, and for analytics, we use Segment, and then we pipe that data down to another services for other functionality. But basically, it's all typically is pretty straightforward to integrate and easy. And especially when you follow, you know, if they have good documentation and you just follow it, it's more or less straightforward. But it gets complex and tricky when you need custom stuff, something that's not a clear-cut case from, well, from the documentation or manual that they have. So, and Andrew had quite a bit of experience lately with that stuff. And why don't you tell us, what was it? The pain
this points. This is the rant portion. I think lately we've just having a lot of problems due to third-party services. And it can be very frustrating because it's not code you wrote yourself, so you're not familiar with it. And you're also having to deal with the overhead of trying to communicate with other people who are, you know, maybe in the same room as you, or you can't like just easily, you know, go walk over to them and ask them, hey, what's up with this piece of code here? And so, yeah, just in general, we've been having different problems around the third-party services. I think one was with AppBoy, which is a service for showing in-app messages to, mm-hmm. to users. It's great. It's an awesome service. But
like, for example, we would use it for, we had our own pop-up system in the app, right?
And
it's getting really complicated and hard to kind of manage the amount of pop-ups to display and you know, when to display them and so on. So AppBoy takes care of it.
There was two complications. One is you have to take engineer time to like develop like the pop-up. Let's say the product team wants to show a pop-up for presenting a product. in the application, then we would have to create a new product view controller and show the product. Or let's say they wanted to show a pop-up for asking them to turn on push notifications, then we would have to develop that. So that's one. And then the other one is managing the actual display of the pop-ups and trying to figure out, okay, has this user seen this pop-up? When should the user see the pop-up? Is the app in a good state to show the pop-up?
Right.
So things like Appway helps with that.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that happened with them is we were having trouble with, upon app launch, we wanted to show a pop-up, and the image was not loading, and actually the screen was showing up black. And it was very troublesome because it was really hard to reproduce, and we couldn't debug it very well because the code is closed source. So all we could see is the header files.
But we don't know what's going on inside.
Yeah, so, like, basically all we just see is the behavior, but, like, we can't go into the internals and step through the code and see, like, oh, what is the actual problem? So then we had to go on an email chain, and it took quite a long time to get to the root of the issue.
Which we resolved at the end, as far as I know, but still, the experience was not pleasant, even though I personally wasn't involved much. I kind of observed the entire team, being involved.
Right, and I think it was unpleasant on both sides, both for us, because obviously we were having problems, and for Appboy, because they were also having a hard time replicating the bug. And this is, again, like I was saying earlier, like, I can't just go to their engineer and be like, hey, here's the replication of the bug, and this is what's happening, and, you know, we have to have this, like, email exchange,
back and forth, yeah.
And there's this back and forth, and in the meantime of waiting for the email to come in, I'm working on other things, so then I lose context. So that was kind of the problem with that one.
Right. But although on the contrary, I remember we had issues with Lingplum and Lingplum segment integration specifically, right?
Yeah.
But in that case, that was easier to resolve, right? Because in that scenario, it actually was open sourced.
Right.
And we were able to... So the problem was really something more or less trivial at the end, right? We couldn't compile our code base with the library when we integrated the Lingplum segment library. But we were able to actually figure out why when we started to dig through the code, because in this scenario, it is open sourced.
Right.
Right, so we could just literally
open up the implementation file, step through it.
Yeah, step through it, put breakpoints if, you know, necessary. And yeah, that was way, way better experience.
One thing that was a big learning experience for me as a kind of junior developer is this was actually the first time where I had, like, when I was trying to debug it, actually, I, like, did not look through the third-party code. Like, it didn't even occur to me, like, oh, it might be a problem with the, you know, Lingplum segment library. I just thought, like, oh, they're just, like, this, like, you know, amazing programmers, and I could never, like, they were able to write this library. I could never, like, you know, it's surely got to be a problem with our code. And I think I spent a lot of time going through our code. It was just not a possibility for me to think, like, oh, it's maybe in our third-party library's code. I think after a discussion with you and us pairing together, we were able to look there and ultimately find what it is. So one big thing for me was learning these third-party libraries, they're not infallible. They're, you know...
They're developers
just like us. Yeah, they're not some untouchable people. That was a pretty key thing for me to learn.
Right. Yeah. Definitely when you realize that, it kind of makes it easier to... look at the things holistically, if you will.
Yeah. Another problem was with the segment integration. So segment's great. We love it. We talked about it in the last episode about using it as a data pipe. I think it's amazing. It's way better than sending...
That's one of those cases where we would never, ever want to build that functionality ourselves. This is a thing on its own. It's huge.
Yeah.
And it's good.
Yeah. So just really quick, basically segment is we send data to segment and segment gets all the data that we send it, and we can choose where we want Segment to send. So they can send it to Mixpanel, they can send it to Leanplum, the Mapboy. They have like, I don't know, 60 different services, a ton of services they can send it to. So instead of us and our code having to send it to those, I don't know, potentially like 15 different services, we just send it to Segment and they pipe it somewhere else. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
The problem though we had with them is one benefit that Segment touts is that you can, with anonymous users, add traits. And traits are basically properties of the user. So you might say, set someone's email as a trait or set someone's age as a trait. And you can associate it with this anonymous ID. So let's say a user hasn't signed in yet. They don't have a user ID that you could associate that trait with. So you assign it to the anonymous ID. And then once a user potentially finishes the sign-up flow and signs up, then you can say, hey, Segment, the traits of age and email on this anonymous ID, associate it now with this user ID. And then from then on out, Segment will say, okay, cool. We'll backfill it and say this user ID, 123, now has this email and this age. And so that's kind of how we implemented it around that. But it ended up not working. Basically, it was kind of an atypical case, apparently. And to add the traits to an anonymous ID before getting the user ID.
Right. And I think it was specifically add them multiple times, right? Or something like that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Because we were proactively collecting pieces of data from user while like the onboarding process is multiple steps, roughly speaking. Like
right.
First step, email, second step, username, and so on. And at each step, you would collect one bit of the data, right?
Right.
And add those traits.
Right. So I think there was a lot of back and forth again because, with these things, the communication could be a little long.
And the way we identified it is actually very interesting too, right? We, looking at the segment, everything was fine, at least according to some
debugs. Segment has this debugger view where you can see all the events you're sending to them. And we would look in there and we'd see that everything looks good. Like, we're sending them the data just as Segment had said in their docs to do. So that added to the deceptiveness and the difficulty of debugging it.
Right, because we notice only in amplitude, right? When we actually would look at the final result of all the data aggregated and collected, and it was off. It was basically like data in one user would have data from another one,
mm-hmm.
which is not like just discrepancy, basically.
Right. So ultimately, the solution was as a workaround, because it is part of their marketing message that you can basically do what we were doing. What we were doing is not wrong. The workaround was they said, for now, you can go ahead and take out those adding the traits to a user to an anonymous ID before you get the user ID. Just go ahead and take those out for now. Their engineering team is working on it to get it to where you can add them before. But now we're not adding those traits. We're waiting to add those traits until the user actually signs up and we get the user ID. That way, now we're only adding traits when we actually have the user ID.
Right.
So it's definitely not ideal. It's unfortunate that we were told one thing and we can't implement it that way, but it sounds like they're going to get on it and fix it. So hopefully we can go ahead and go back to the original implementation. But these things are just like, I think what was so frustrating about them is just, again, it's not our code. We're having to deal with the overhead of talking with these with other people and like the asynchronous communication. It takes time. There's latency.
Right.
So, yeah.
It almost felt at one point that maybe like pairing with them would be a great idea, instead of going back and forth. And
yeah, sometimes I just wish like you could just jump on a Skype call or something and just like pair for like 2 hours. I feel like it would actually save both companies time and money.
Oh, well, maybe we'll get there. Who knows?
Yeah.
Another one, one of the, issues and maybe unpleasant experiences that I had with one of those services was Branch. Branch is a service for lots of things, right? But mostly what we use it for is deep linking and handling URLs that we share on the web that eventually lead to our, or like deep link or to into our application, or if people, if users don't have it installed, it's going to prompt them to install in the App Store, right? So that is a great, again, one of those things that we really, really, really don't want to handle ourselves. It's actually very complicated.
There's a lot of gotchas.
Yeah, and Apple is not making it easy with this push on universal links, which are technically are better. But anyway, so we integrated Branch, same thing, following the documentation was pretty smooth. They likely, it's very likely that, you know, they have open source code too. So it was very lucky to have at some point. But the things start to get tricky, very tricky, when we diverge from that clear-cut path in the docs, right? We wanted something custom. And specifically, they give us an ability to share users could we could generate branch links on the client side, on iOS side, and users can share those links through the normal, through the usual iOS system prompt.
The
right?
share sheet on iOS.
Exactly. Yeah. And the problem there was the SDK and API were given by Branch could what we wanted to do, we wanted to create a branch link with all the metadata in it for the share, like what kind of campaign that is, what kind of user ID that shared it, and so
the
on.
Channel like Facebook or Instagram.
Yeah, those are the big ones too. Yeah. Pieces of data, like where exactly it was shared, like Facebook. You're right.
All these stuff for tracking and knowing which of your, what's driving, like what links people are clicking, basically.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But what with the, but after that though, right, we were able to do that with the SDK. But after that, we also wanted to, if another user, a new user, uses one of those links from one of our customers, then we want to, upon the app launch, Branch will tell us that that was that, you know, branch link with such and such metadata used. We wanted to record that as a successful referral, if you will, on our side, on our backend, right? But for that, we needed to have that link's unique ID stored in our database on the backend. Like, again, it's already kind of getting complicated, right? Just even explaining all of this.
Yes.
But the point is, the Branch SDK, they would let us do either one of two things. Either we go the one route where it's all nice and the link is generated for us and users can share it. And we even know what channel they share to, but we don't know the branch link ID. So if someone installs our app using that link, we cannot give them the credit of that reference. Or other way around, we could create branch ID, branch link, get its ID, but we can't share, we don't know where they shared it, like whether they shared it to Facebook or Twitter. And so basically, you know, same thing. Like they told us that's not a typical use case, and I guess it's not.
Yeah, so I think what happens there is that we're basically at the mercy of their implementation. And right. If we have something so custom,
we just build it ourselves. Or,
yeah, if they have something so custom, and we just can't work in their kind of mold. Because, and so that creates complications. It makes it difficult for us. And we were like working with both the backend and iOS, and it was kind of a back and forth figuring out.
Right,
how we should solve it. It was took a while to figure out.
Branch was helpful. They have you know, we can communicate in Slack with them, so it's a bit faster than email. And but still, they said, "Oh, like we are potentially planning to build something like that, but it's not there right now." So our decision was, it was a product decision at the end after all of that, that we would not track referrals yet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more important for us, for our business right now, to know the channel people came through rather than give a credit to a specific user for referring people.
Right.
And the overall communication with with them is important.
Yeah, this is an overarching theme for not just the particular third-party services, but all of them.
Right. It's, again, as we said, maybe ideally we hope, we're not sure, I'm not sure how realistic that is, but maybe we could pair program. That would be like the best way of handling at least for us. But, keep in mind that communication overhead with all of those vendors, and especially when you have a lot of them, just like Guido, it could be take significant time.
Yeah, and it's not just the latency of like, oh, they took 3 hours to get back to this email. It's also the fact that while I'm waiting those 3 hours for them to respond, I'm working on something else, and now I've context switch, and now all that stuff has left my brain, and I have to switch context back again.
Another trade-off is, well, we could build it ourselves. Then you're, less concerned about communication. And if you're the team that builds it, in the same office with you, right, or at least remotely with you. But you got to have resources for that. You got to have people, money, all of it, right?
Right. So basically, the lesson is if you're Facebook, you can afford to do it.
Pretty much, yeah. You have
or Uber or whatever.
Bodies to go with that.
Yeah.
We can't. We still, we're smaller.
Right. But these services are still pretty amazing, actually. A lot of them are so awesome. I think it's just, it's easy to complain when things don't go perfectly smooth. And some of them go smoother than others, and it's awesome.
So what are main takeaways for this episode?
So one big key takeaway for me was that third-party libraries are not infallible. They're not these like perfect, pristine things that some coding genius made. They're just programmer just like you. And of course you should check your code when you're debugging, but it might be something, in the code that you're using from that library. So that was I don't know, it might be obvious to other programmers with more experience, but that to me was like, oh wow, okay. It's not always my fault.
Right.
Yeah, that was kind of revealing.
And another one is debugging open source libraries is, it's possible, right, comparing to closed source libraries. Because, you can step through the code, right? You can, exactly the same thing you were saying, right? If something, they're not perfect, right? If something happens and you already checked your code, which is most likely place where it breaks, but right. If... you see that, maybe something's inside of that thing potentially because it doesn't give me the results I'm expecting. Well, if it's open source, you can actually get in the code and put breakpoints in their library, right? Why not? And you can get to the root of the problem.
Yeah. Another takeaway for me, or I guess for both of us, was do your research on the third-party service. And I think the product people and the other and anyone else who's a stakeholder in it will kind of do their own research on like how well it serves their needs. But I think one good thing that you can do as software engineers is to look at the quality of the integration docs. Basically, what we were saying earlier, is the code examples clean? Do they break things down simply and easily and use plain language? I think that's a good sign of how much they, how good of a experience you're going to have using it.
Right, exactly. And the last one is what we mentioned already. Make sure that you have an open line of communication with your vendors, third-party services. And just, as open as you can, I think the best advice we can get. If you can have a call with them, have a call with them. It's going to be better and faster for everyone. If you can chat. Well, and I guess email is the fallback.
So yeah, guys, that's kind of the topic for today. Hope you enjoyed, and thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this, please support us by rating or reviewing on iTunes. That really helps us out a lot. If you'd like to give us feedback or have a specific request, contact us on Inside iOS Dev on Twitter. Tune in next week to hear more. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
You
You're listening to You're listening to Inside iOS Dev, episode number four.
Four. Yeah.
What's the name of it? Oh yeah.
So first,
what? Man, I'm looking at our dogs. I don't get that. What the fuck? What the fuck is this?
Why is that there?
I know, right? Where is that supposed to be?